do an excellent job and set me up so wonderfully for my program. Today we are going to be really speaking quite a bit about Mauna Kea, many different topics actually, and I have my dear friend Auntie Puanani Rogers in here with me, and I also have Alan Parkini in here who's going to help me when we're discussing the Waimea Canyon lawsuit. He can jump in on other topics too, but we're going to be speaking about a handful of different issues today on Kauai Soapbox, which is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Al Pastor Tacos, George's Food Truck, Kilauea Paint. Mahalo, mahalo, mahalo.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR, across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Open every day from 11 to 4, Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food, 652-6953.
Chef George of the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef George of the Jungle supports KKCR.
Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, specializing in professional-grade Pittsburgh paints and paint sundries, premium pet food, and organic livestock feed, propane exchange and filling too, located just past the Shell station on Kolo Road in Kilauea, Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5:30, and Saturday from 8 to 1, locally owned Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, 828-6655. 24 students of Kamehameha Middle School Chapel Choir from the Kapa'alama Oahu campus will be performing a concert and Kanikapila night on Saturday, April 11th, beginning at 7 p.m. at the Waiole Hu'ia Church in Hanalei. This is a free performance. Bring your ukuleles and learn a song, which will be performed together as a group. For more information, contact the church office at 826-6253 or email waiole@aloha.net.
Okay, and this is community radio. I have to apologize. That Kanikapila, which was excellent, I had that, that happened already. So that was on the 11th, and so many people might have enjoyed that, but it's not coming up. So,
old news.
Kalamai, missed on that one. So, Auntie Puanani, and I even, you know, there was a fun thing that went back and forth on the Facebook today about being called Auntie when maybe you're not quite old enough to be called Auntie.
Whoa,
maybe you
were,
maybe you're young for me to call you Auntie. I just mean that in respect, because you seem like a young
Auntie.
Well, you seem like a youngish woman too. So I don't.
Mahalo.
A youngish woman on that. So.
But it's true. Sometimes some people call me that, and I don't think that they should be calling me that, because I don't know who they are, or
they're 5 years you know, younger.
So, okay, but it's okay for you to call me Auntie.
Okay, well, you deserve that respect, even if you're, I don't know how old you are, but you don't look that old to me. So, I wanted to speak a little bit about Mauna Kea, and we're expecting a call in from Ke Aloha.
Yay.
She's been a real strong leader in this whole movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will have her speak to more the history of it, and certainly I have you in here to help me do the show, because
we can both share our experiences because we were there.
Right, and you have decades of knowledge on this. I went for the weekend, and I have to say, it was so powerful for me, and it was different than what I expected. I sort of expected something to feel more like a protest, a battle, a riot, something like that. And it was
no angry Hawaiians.
No, but boy,
not
were there. There were Hawaiians. There was probably at least 100, and at least, the day that I got there. Wasn't a day that there was a lot of events happening.
What day was that?
Saturday, and then Sunday, many, many people were there.
Yes, that's when the halals
went. Hundreds of people there. But when I got there, I was in an extreme minority as a transplant kind of thing. So much aloha, so much love, and giving
we
a shout.
We didn't see any colors up there.
No colors.
Everybody was the same color.
Everybody was the same color. There was so much warmth and friendship. It reminded me of the time after Hurricane Iniki.
Oh, yes. We all came together.
Everybody was coming together, and there was this sense of abundant sharing. The thing that was really clear to me was it wasn't choreographed. It was organic in how it was just happening. People were coming all over. Everybody's sharing different things. We had these guys, they did rock walls. Their truck said Hawaii Rocks, and they had uhi and lobster and lots of food.
Onalicious food.
Onalicious food. We had this big celebration. Somebody else came with...
The food was really good up there. It never lacked for any good food. They were well supplied.
Really, really good food, and I just can hardly find words to say how welcoming and warm, and just to me, when you see a time of calm, it was all about sharing, all about kindness, and the word sacred is not too strong of a word. It is almost an understatement for how it feels up there. When you watch on the screen, it kind of looks maybe cold and rocky, and it is cold and rocky, but it is so much more than that. The mist everywhere, all these plants that you don't see anyplace.
Yeah, for me, it was all about the mountain. The people, too, of course, made it even more intense, but it was the feeling of being on that mountain that really grabbed me, and it has not let me go. I still feel like half of me is still over there. I hated to leave, but had to come home. But anyway, aloha, who's listening to us.
Yes.
Aloha mai. We send on our aloha to you because we are in Kapu Aloha. And to share my experiences, first of all, I do want to say that I went as a Kauai person, so not just for myself, but for my ohana, my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, all my loved ones, as well as all of my associates and friends on the island of Kauai. And I made sure that they knew that Kauai's presence was there.
Me too.
First off the plane, we went straight to a demonstration on the street where I made a sign that said, Kako o mai Kauai o mano. Ole TMT, and I was holding my sign with hundreds of people on the streets at an intersection at Hilo. That was Wednesday afternoon. So right off the plane, man, we started our mission, our intention was there to go and support to Kako'o and Ko'okua as much as we could, and then to also, I took all my mahalos up there to those people that are there. My gratitude and my love for their sacrifice. They have never left. Some of them are there for the duration. They're living up there. Maybe they take breaks and come down. Because, you know, there is such a thing as altitude disease. And if you stay up there too late sometimes, some people's bodies can't take it. So you need to come back down. You know, maybe more than 6 hours is a little pushing it. But I was fortunate. I did not experience that. It was harder to breathe. It was harder to walk for me. It seemed like my shoes weighed a ton. And that was at the 9,000 elevation. But then when we went further up, we went up to the summit, thousands of feet further up. The air was much thinner, and you had to breathe slowly and walk slowly. So it's kind of hard for me to breathe when I was trying to chant too at the same time, but it was awesome.
What chant did you share up there?
E kuha aheo. You want to hear it?
I kind of do. I mean, it was so powerful, all the olis that were shared when I was there. It was just, and we were all singing.
Okay, the translation for this one, and I'm hoping that everybody will learn it. I've got it on my Facebook. I'll bring the words to our Ahupua'a meeting when I get there. I'm going to teach it to my Ahupua'a council people. And it's about, it says, stand tall, my Hawaii, band of warriors of my land. The new dawn for our people of Hawaii is upon us. For my nation, I give my all so that our legacy lives on. And it goes like this. Kuha'aheo, e ku'u Hawaii, ku'u Hawaii, mama kakaua. O ku'u aina, e ke e hu kakahiaka o na o iwi o Hawaii nei. No ku'u lahu e Hawaii pawai o la mau. Chill, one more time.
Okay,
answer me.
All right, okay. I will, I'm shy.
Ku ha'aheo.
Ku ha'aheo.
E ku'u Hawaii.
E ku'u Hawaii.
Mama kakaua.
Mama kakaua.
O ku'u aina.
O ku'u aina.
E ke e hu kakahi aka o na o iwi o Hawaii nei. No ku'u lahu e ha'awi pawai o la mau. Yay!
It was so beautiful. That was sung a number of times.
So
many times. I was singing out fully up there. I was shy to sing on the radio.
Oh, but that's the one, though, that I don't somehow, it's just going around in my mind. And the person that taught us this is Hina Lie Moana Wong Kalu, who is one of our heroes and one of our best chanters and cultural practitioners of Ole and Hula that I know of. So it was wonderful to see her there. I also played the ukulele, sang a Hawaiian song, and she danced the hula to it.
Yeah.
So,
it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. And were you up there on Sunday?
No, I came home Saturday.
Okay.
I even missed the parade. I hated that, but I had to come home.
On Sunday, plenty of people came up,
yeah.
And Kaylee Reichel and Hina Vong. And,
yes, I know.
It was really, really powerful. That, as the, protocol unfolded again, it did not seemingly be choreographed at all, not really, because I was standing around, nobody told me what to do. Everybody just seemed to fall into place, and
yes,
it kind of came
awesome.
Out well. And at the Ahu down at the at the base, that was really a very, very beautiful big circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw plenty of people from Kauai in
yes.
there that had come. And so
I think people from our council, as a matter of fact, Jonathan Jay.
Oh, from?
Our Ahupua'a council.
Okay, yes, okay. I was thinking our county council? No.
We have an Ahupua'a council. I'll talk about that later because I'm going to also share some news about a meeting with Walter Reedy on Kauai that is coming up. I invited him over, and he accepted my invitation.
Yes.
But we're still talking about Mauna Kea.
Yes, we are, yeah. And because I'm expecting Ke Aloha to call in very soon.
Woo-hoo, Ke Aloha.
And
call in.
So she's going to be calling in, but one of the things that I have found really interesting as I've been watching online and the dialogues that have come forward, it's not that people mind the science.
Are we talking about counter-arguments?
Well, I mean, it's always important.
I'm into it.
I mean,
bring it on.
But to me, the Polynesian people have been a millennium ahead of, like, the rest of
science.
The people in the science.
Oh, definitely.
And so up there, there's all this mapping and elements right up there in the crater. This was an area that was used
mm-hmm.
historically.
Yes, astronomy.
Astronomy.
Yes,
and
the reflections on the Waiau Lake, for one.
So what this 30-meter telescope is, it's a 100-meter mirror, so it allows for much more light to come in, and so they're able to see further. So what they're trying to look at is things that happened 13 billion years ago, because that's how light years work. So there's some of the quest is to look at how the universe might have formed. So,
Ask Stephen Hawking.
So there is right. There's that side of things, but
he's a theorist, though. It's only a theory,
right?
The Big Bang theory.
But so there's that.
But this is what I want to say about that, and it's not about the science, because for us the science is already something that we deal with anyways. All the time. One of the counter arguments, in fact, I would like to say, was someone that said, it was a scientist, in fact, that said, we're taking away the knowledge, the opportunity of us to, we're taking away the opportunity for humanity to have knowledge of the universe. And so my response is, what about taking away the rights of humanity to preserve their sacred places? That is something that is affecting our humanity. So what's the argument there?
Well, and what I was going to say, when we're looking at 13 billion years ago, here and now are arguably more important.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll help us to think about that far away. I think it's very important for us to concentrate on what is happening here right in front of our faces right now.
So
we're facing it daily, every day. There is a pain and there is a hurt to our people too. So take that into consideration. You are hurting us. You cannot understand that. I also had a response to your friend Koa Kanula. I hope he's listening.
Go ahead. He was the one who was saying this is about sovereignty. And I said, yes, it is. So.
Okay, he was the one that said what's really behind the protests are the issue of sovereignty and all the people getting sucked in to protesting the telescope. They don't even know the bigger mission of the protest. Aloha, Kanu, Koa Kanu. I got a response for you. We're not there fighting for our sovereignty, because you know why? We are sovereign. We don't have to fight for it. We already know we are sovereign people in a sovereign kingdom and government here in Hawaii. Get that straight. And people, the people were not sucked in. Wrong words. They were there on their own free will to come to respect. It was respect for us and for our Mauna. So even if the state, which is fake, is not paying, we are paying the highest price for this telescope. It's our aina. It's our sacred place. Think about that, Kanu, Koa Kanu. Okay, and I speak not in anger. I just speak in passion, because your words hurt me. So, Aolipilikia, I forgive you. I forgive you, but try to get your perspective straight, not crooked. Crooked perspectives can cause confusion. So just helping out, and if you want to respond, I would love to hear from you, Koa Kanu. And another thing that somebody else said was in the EIS, it definitely admitted that the cumulative perspectives that impact the past and present actions on cultural, archaeological, and historical resources is substantial and significant and adverse.
Thank you, Puanani. And we have Kealoha on the line
Yoo-hoo,
with us.
Yes.
Aloha, Kealoha.
Oh, aloha. Aloha, Auntie Nani. How are you?
Oh, Maika Iloa. I miss you.
I miss you, too. Thanks so much for you guys calling me. Oh.
Yes. Oh, please, we need to hear from you and hear your mana'o, what's the present situations. And tell us about what you're doing. Yeah, your court case.
Oh, okay. Yes. I can talk about that.
You can.
We have two cases right now, actually three. One in the Intermediate Court of Appeal, which is we're filing brief on actually as we speak, working on them at least. And that one is challenging the TMT's permit altogether.
That's right. And so by the way, answer this question. How long was their lease before? 60 years.
65.
Oh, so they've been there 65 years already? Oh, well, where was I 65 years ago?
It's going to end in 2033, they say. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So help us understand, for the listener who's driving down the road, and they're just really tuning in to understanding, gosh, I'm hearing all this stuff, but I don't know what it means. Can you give us a synopsis of what this is about?
Okay, the synopsis is the first thing and the first and foremost thing is that this Mauna Kea is sacred. To
everybody, but particularly the indigenous people, the Hawaiian people.
Yes. No, I think to people all over the world. Aboriginal people.
Well, to all of us, yes. And okay, I'm sorry for putting words in your mouth. Continue.
It's sacred because it is the burial ground of some of our highest and most revered ancestors and has been and continues to be. It is also an origin place, so it's where our chants of creation, our stories of creation begin, and it is the home of our deities, and so it's Bawakua, it belongs, it's in the heavenly realm, and it belongs to the Akua. It's also our primary aquifer, and so it produces the water and keeps the water for the majority of Hawaii's population. And the conflict that has developed over that is that they use many hazardous materials. It's not just the TMT, it's all of those observatories. And they also have very substandard sewage treatment systems. And many of the things are just actually, you know, leach fields and septic tanks that are going on up there, and that's not right, and there's no complex hydrology reports that have been done. There's small little reports here and there, but we really need to have a clear understanding of what actually is going on with the hydrology of Mauna Kea. I mean, it has glacial ice from the Ice Age and other things like that that contribute. They've drilled in and found water, you know, as high up as 9,000 feet, and as old as 1,876 years. So it's not well understood, and it needs to be understood because for 40-some-odd years they've been just kind of flushing, you know, human refuge into the ground. And so that's a problem. The other problems are, you know, that it's a fragile ecosystem with plants and animals that are found nowhere else on Earth, actually. And some of them are small, some of them are big birds, but all life deserves to, you know, be protected and to live.
And we did a show on that last week with somebody who had done the study up there, and it's at 14,000 feet in the middle of the ocean, so there is a number of endemic lichen and plants and clusters of life underneath those.
Exactly. Yes. Well, there's also native birds and, you know, and mammals. So, you know, it's insects and things like that. And they're only found there. So, and then there's, of course, the Hawaiian practice, which, you know, is very important for us to continue.
And I've looked at some of your writings and a little bit about you. You are an astronomist, is that correct? You worked up there before?
Yeah, no, I'm not an astronomer. I'm a kilo, though, a Hawaiian star person, but I'm not an astronomer. I did work up there for 12 years. I worked for the British government as a telescope system specialist.
Oh, okay. All right. So you have 12 years of experience up there.
Yeah, I lived up there for 12 years, yes.
So, thank you. So, how do you see the world responding to this? I know that you are speaking in many different environments. Is there anything that you can share with us that you're getting from out in the world, other places?
I'm getting an overwhelming, and I'm sure everyone else is as well, you know, getting an overwhelming positive response from the Kapu Aloha that has been maintained, especially by the young people who are, you know, holding down the Kapu checkpoint over there.
So Kapu Aloha, for people who don't know, that means, you know, very positive civil disobedience, right? Pardon me?
Pono. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah. Pono, yes.
Pono disobedience.
I'm just trying to help people who don't understand the language. Pono, which is righteous disobedience.
Well, let me say something else. Actually, Uncle Kaliko is teaching us a new word, and he's correct. We're not committing disobedience. We're committing triple assistance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Education. And I like that one better.
Me too.
Right, because actually what we're doing is when we stop the bulldozers, okay, we're stopping them and we're preventing them from committing the crime of desecration, which is a crime in Hawaii. Hawaii Revised Statute 711-1107.
Yes.
Which, if you're charged, is a $10,000 fine or 1 year in prison and or both. It's a serious charge. And desecration is defined as defacing marking or what they call that, mostly defacing or hurting or destroying anything of historic value, a burial ground, cemetery, you know, monuments. Mauna Kea is kind of all of those things. It's a historic site, it's a conservation district, it's a sacred site and a burial ground. So they are committing the act of desecration, and so what the protectors are doing is the protectors are trying to stop them from doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, yeah.
And, you know, when I was up there, what I found is the rangers felt like they were on our side. At least it felt like they realized what was happening was Pono.
The rangers or the police? I mean, the rangers are the university's people. They don't really have any jurisdiction to do anything. But the police, I think, also are, you know, they're following orders, but they're trying. I think they're very sympathetic, and the dog care officers as well. I mean, they don't really want to be doing any of this, but
that's what I'm saying. Like in watching their reaction, you could tell that, you know, they're very gentle, very tender about everything. Like looking them in the eyes is they know that. There's righteousness in the movement.
So then why arrest them?
Yeah.
They have to make that decision right then and there where they draw the line for their culture and for their beliefs or for their job.
Well, I'm in agreement with that. In the window of time that I was there, there weren't arrests going on. You know, it seemed like they were, you know, the energy of it was not conflicting. It was actually pretty supportive, and, you know, that seemed like they're looking out for safety. Some of them had blue outfits on, some had yellow, and it says Ranger on it. So those are the difference in that. I was speaking with Liko Martin for about a half hour today, trying to get him on the line, because he is such a poet. He says things so beautifully, and I cannot really reframe them in a way that does justice, but I would like to try and speak to what I heard him say, and it's almost 4:30.
Sing it.
It's you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and I have Puanani Rogers in the studio with me, and Kealoha Piscota. Am I saying your name right?
Yes. Pishoda,
it looks Italian, but I know you're not. Anyway, I am, so.
It is Italian.
I look at it and I go, you know, it's Italian. I look at your picture, So, what Liko had to say, you know, in his very, very poetic way, is that we have to look at this as water running down the hill, and all these issues are aligned. And that's what I agree on, is any of these pieces, whether it is pesticide use that people don't want, a telescope that people don't want, pieces where it is the dominant culture coming down the hill in a way that they have the full right, that their right, their need is always what seems to prevail, and there's resistance everywhere. And he was saying that what he saw, because I was asking him, he's been everywhere from, I don't know if I'm supposed to say, but talking to people who are really at the top of the pile in these things and going to many, many of the places on Oahu. And, you know, his sense was all these people in government and, you know, that just simply work for the government, they know what's right. They want things to work well. They don't mean to be on the wrong side of it. He kept trying to really encourage a mindset of love and forgiveness and gentle encouragement towards that group, because he said it is going to repair itself. It's the flow is happening. They're trying to stop it, not just speaking about the telescope, but everything from the injustice that's happened here in Hawaii, that people are waking up, they're waking up, and the courts and the economic system are designed, and even the legal system our laws are designed to facilitate economic advancement. It's designed to do that, which is adverse to what is necessarily healthy for the people or the land. And, you know, this is the battle that we're in, and it's the change that we're going through. I wish I could say it like he did, because he
sounds very optimistic, though.
He just kept speaking in an encouraging way, and he wrote a new song about it, and he was
Stand Up, I think it was. He made everybody stand up.
That he sang at Ilalani Palace yesterday.
Yes. I don't know.
Right.
Well, he was working on it, but
well, this is my belief, and it's pretty similar to his, because it is kind of optimistic, but it has a deeper feeling than just optimism. I believe that there is a new dawn happening. I believe there will be a huliao. And it all takes for us to come together. We have to be one. It's time. Time to stand in dignity and not feel oppressed anymore in our own land of freedom, our own sovereign lands. And never forget that we are sovereign. So, like I said earlier, Yakialoha, they said, oh, there was an underlying thing about this being a sovereignty movement. But my response is, hey, we know we're sovereign already.
Yeah, I hear you. I would concur. I mean, okay, let me say this too. Like, what Paul always says this. Yeah, Paul Nevin.
Yes, yeah.
He always talks about what was taken first was not the politics, you know, so much as the mind.
Yes.
Colonized
the only
mind.
Thing that can restore that is the spirituality, and that is what the Kapu Aloha is about, because we unify in the spirit of Aloha, and all the rest will follow.
Mm-hmm.
The kingdom will follow too. The kingdom will be risen up because of Aloha and because of Mauna Kea, not the other way around.
Aye,
you know, and it's because when the mountain moves, we have to respond, and we have responded. The people have responded.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the hulilau. And I agree, Auntie, it's time for that.
Yeah.
We cannot go. I feel that so much, too, and I don't know quite how to articulate it. I just know that it is, and I see it everywhere. It's like miracles every day, everywhere. I almost, I can't take any more miracles.
Right. And I want to back that up a little bit in my coming over there, not growing up on that island and not having as deep a connection to the culture, I felt like it was something I will remember for my entire life. It was that powerful, and it was really beyond words. And I really encourage anybody that cares about this to consider going over there and lending that support and just being a part of everything. There's so many people who have come, and I know a week from, or next Monday, supposedly, they're bringing the Earth Movers in again. I have another person in the studio, Alan, who has something he wants to share.
I have a question. This is not an issue I'm deeply familiar with. Is compromise possible?
I say no. We are not compromising this. This, we've drawn the line in the sand now, right now. So
I think too, Andy, the question is, what is compromise? The Hawaiian people have been compromised.
Yes.
For all these years because they have been occupied.
And that's why we don't like that word.
And I even on looking at this is like, how do you compromise on putting an 18-story telescope in? It's either in or it's not. I don't really see the compromise is build the telescope but somewhere else where it's welcome.
That's right.
I mean, that's where I would see something that works out for everybody. I mean, what they say is that there's a number of places in the world where this is wanted, and it's almost competing for it the way cities compete to hold the Olympics.
Yeah, that's true.
And so Hawaii, you know, UH was able to get this, and up there it's above 40% of the atmosphere, so that's one thing. It's a smooth shield volcano. I mean, there are physical characteristics. It's one of a handful of unique places in the world that's optimum for this, but who it really benefits is not the people of Hawaii.
No.
And when we've really looked at, because I have bothered to look at that, where the jobs go, most of those jobs that are good, strong jobs, they go from somewhere else. And the telescope area, they pay $1 per year to lease this land. So it's a freebie. It's not like, and then when they say, well, the university's going to get $1 million a year, I think, you know, I used to be in business. But I'm
in business.
That's
not much.
That's not much. That's like, you know, a little retail store can make.
But how is it benefiting our people? That is so important.
Right.
It's not.
It's benefiting a very narrow group of people, and then it's this curiosity from the edge of space, but, like, what works here? So in the question asked, is there compromise, when I was there looking, I really didn't see that anything less than a no-build would...
I think also that part of, I mean, we are in court. They can't meet the legal requirements to build it. So, you know, the question of asking us to compromise when they can't actually sustain the argument.
Yes, and they've broken their own rules. And we've seen, like on the EIS, certain things where there was a no build was really the recommendation that was suppressed. There's another person in here, Marshall, you have a question or a comment?
Is this an international project, or who exactly is behind it?
It is.
Well, I can speak to that.
Go ahead, babe.
And this is some of the problem. It's University of California. It's Gordon Moore, who's the co-inventor of the Intel Pentium processor.
Yes, I used
it's
to work
all
for
these
Intel.
People. But the university is fronting for them. You know, they're not even paying for the lawyers to fight us. It's the state taxpayers of Hawaii who are.
No, but his question was, is it an international issue? So the countries that are involved in this are
Canada.
Canada
is the main one, right?
Canada.
India. I think China has something to do with it also.
Mm-hmm.
But the proponents are actually from California.
I see.
And the other telescopes are also international telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say yes, it is an international situation.
So is it fully funded at this point, and has construction started at all?
It is not fully funded. They don't even have even close to what they need for the $1.4 billion. But they have begun to, they've drilled the holes for the fence line.
and yeah, and they're beginning to rub and grade, or they're wanting to. So that's what the truck. That's what
we had to stop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They put their bodies in front of those machines to stop them.
Yeah.
So yes, and they don't have a lease. So how come they're digging already?
That's correct. They don't have the lease.
They have no authority to have those machines up there even.
Yeah, it's just they've have the intention. OHA, Office of Hawaiian Affairs, and University of Hawaii have basically said yes to this. And then now I know that OHA is reconsidering. And then there's a lot of pressure on University of Hawaii to really look when their directive is to support the Hawaiian culture. Is that what they're really doing?
OHA is so fluctuating. They're always vacillating back and forth. You can't really get a straight answer from them right away. And that's sad. I really feel sad about that because I look up to those people that are supposed to be managing their office and their responsibilities in a true and pono way. But it doesn't seem to be happening. So I think we have a group of people in Oahu that are on that tact of being in that OHA office and getting as much answers as we can and, you know, helping them make a decision. They're so hard to make decisions for them. They just vacillate too much.
There are a lot of people taking action. A key date is next Monday, and that is the time when they want. They've put a moratorium on till next Monday.
Yes.
So people who are wanting to go over and support next Monday, really early a.m.,
mm-hmm.
so that means show up there Sunday night and camp in the cold, in the beautiful cold, with great food and a warm tent. And
right. I wanted to ask Ke Aloha, are you involved in those discussions between the people on the Mauna and the TMT people? They are continuous discussions, I understand.
No, we're not. They haven't talked to any of us, actually. I don't know. They keep saying that they're talking to us. And
yes.
Shading, but they haven't.
I know David Ige showed up on the mountain last week.
Is there a fund supporting the legal fight against this? And where's that money coming from, if there is?
We do have a legal defense fund. It goes through the nonprofit Kahea, and it can be accessed by going on alohamamakea.org.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are welcome, and there's lots of information on there. We've only had it up the last couple of days because this is a brand new website.
Alohamamakea.org.
Yeah.
.org.
And
okay.
I think you can get to it through protectmaunakea.org. Also.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're trying to raise funds not only for our cases, but we also would like to raise funds for the lawyers to help the 31 who's been arrested.
Yes.
And to also, you know, raise funds for other needs for the protectors up there and, you know, just to keep everything going. And,
mm-hmm.
And so Kahea has offered their nonprofit status.
So that's Kahea, Kahea.org. And I saw that they have a really good blog post for people explaining more about it. But right now there's a lot of information that people can find with a Google search.
Yeah, there is.
So I thank you so much for calling in. I know that you have a slate in front of you, and I appreciate that you made time for us on a very busy day.
Auntie, thank you so much and for inviting me, and I'm so honored to be on with you, Auntie, and love you.
I love you, too.
And aloha to all the people of Kauai, and mahalo for all of your support.
And aloha to all our people on our mauna.
Yeah.
And I want to give a shout-out.
Mauna.
I want to give a shout-out to all the people who have been waving signs. There was so many people out on the road. All over this island, you know.
Yes.
It's Anahola, big crowd. Lihue, big crowd. Hanapepe,
mm-hmm.
Hanale.
Chicken skin. It's all chicken skin, man.
Yes. Yeah. Big amount. So feel loved.
Okay. Aloha. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Love you.
So, thank you. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A, Kila Wea, the station that loves you. And we have been speaking about Mauna Kea, a big issue. We have Puanani Rogers in here from Living Sovereign. She's been there for the week or more with Mary Monarch as well.
4 days.
I have Alan Parachini in here, and one of the reasons I have you in here, Alan, is because I know you are pretty Akamai about the courts and law, and that you have worked before in the Los Angeles court system.
Correct.
And so I'm going to want to pick your brain on a handful of things. At about 5 o'clock, we're going to shift our topic over to the Waimea lawsuit. I might have a call coming in, which I will take if so, but I want to speak to, before the 5 o'clock hour, a little bit about the marijuana dispensaries. A lot of these bills, there's so much nuances of these legal efforts. There's a fine line in between, and so something can sound one way on the surface. It's not always what we think it is. I have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yes, Alicia, I would like to find out, you know, OHA in the past has just passed this, and how come now OHA is trying to me, they're like, they're trying to redo the ruling that they just passed, and they're trying to squeeze these guys for more money. But, you know, how come they just dropped the ball? I know OHA is kind of a dysfunctional board, but, you know, something as important as this kind of slays me.
You're raising a good question. Do you have any kind of response to that? Because, I mean, you sound like you've been looking at it pretty closely. Do you have a thought?
No, I think my take on the whole thing is that OHA knew about this, but maybe they're trying to use this venue like now to extract more, squeeze more money out of this whole operation, when they could have had it from the beginning when this thing first came up in, I think it was in 2007.
Well, yes, and I mean, I've seen that. I've seen that conjectured in the press, and squeezing more money out is one thing, although I think we all know that this isn't something that's quantifiable in dollars and cents. Like, if they were to say to the people who have such a sacred commitment to this, hey, we'll give you, you know, $500 million to resolve your other bummers, I'm not really sure that there's a price they could come up with that would actually resolve that. That at least has been my clear sense from watching. I grabbed a really high number, but I mean, it's not really up for auction. And OHA, Office of Hawaiian Affairs, is maybe a little bit closer to the interests of Kanaka Mo'oli, but from my 30-something years of living here, to me, in my mind, it's close to what was the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And yeah, the BIA is going to say, sure, go mine the Navajo Reservation from uranium. We're good with that. They just gave permission to move a very sacred mountain off the Apache Reservation so it can be strip mined for copper, right? Mm-hmm. To me, when we're looking at this issue, it really becomes about indigenous cultures as opposed to the dominant culture. And I'm going to give shout out for us white people, because I'm white, right? I love white people. Both my parents are white. It's not that white people are bad. It's, and we're all indigenous to wherever we're from. We've just been domesticated earlier, right? So it's people who live close to the land, whose heart and soul literally is intertwined with their natural environment. And when there is a displacing entity, when somebody else in the world says, hey, that's great. Like for us, we could say, yeah, move the thing to Chile, because Chile's got a good plateau that might be good.
Yes, yes.
But maybe the Chileans aren't really that excited about it.
Well, the other one, too, is, you know, if this 18-story telescope, the Keck telescope is 14 stories. So I would think they would need a new EIS. And the other one was, if they're so good and the technology is so good, why don't you just do it from the ground? You don't have to have it on the mountain.
Right, although we kind of know why that is, right? Because it's above the light. It's in the thin atmosphere. I mean, they've got a lot of good reasons why sticking it 14,000 feet in the air is better than having it at sea level. I mean, I can get that they have a reason, but that reason might not be strong enough for a yes.
The last time I was up in Mauna Kea and we got to go and tour the Keck and the Subaru telescopes,
mm-hmm.
There were a bunch of telescopes, 9-meter scopes that weren't being used.
That's right.
Take those out, retire them, and use the footprint instead of going and do it on another pool, you know, which is right on the top, but it's on the side.
I've looked mm-hmm. at that. There are 9 telescopes apparently that
are decommissioned
mm-hmm. and they haven't been taken down or anything like that, but I guess one reason they don't want to do it is those 9 scopes are right on the summit, so you can see it from everywhere, and this mountain is something that you can see from everywhere. So if they put this on those old sites, this is much, much larger than them, so they've kind of put it down the hill a little bit to hide it. So, I mean, I've been trying to look at those things, but the bottom line is the telescope isn't welcome.
No, and the decommissioned one, I agreed, you should be removed from the mauna.
Well, the other one is, the other part is, you know, when they talk about, well, this is a sacred mountain, yes, it is. The thing about it is, we wouldn't like to put a telescope, say, on the Wailing Wall in Israel, you know, in mm-hmm. Jerusalem.
Right. I think that that's an appropriate, like putting it right there in Jerusalem, that I think that actually is a pretty good comparison.
Yeah, you know, I last time I went up there, we went up there for a meeting with the scientists, the astronomers, and it was part of the Makalis.
You're breaking up. Can you move to a better spot?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Okay. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. So he had...
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good thoughts in
yes,
there.
Yes, you did. Thank you for calling,
Thank
sir.
You for calling. We appreciate it. And the number is 826-7771. We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Oh, you need to turn your radio down, or off, excuse me. I'll try again. Aloha, you're on the air. You've got to turn your radio off. I'm going to try one more time. Turn your radio off. Thank you so much. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello? Okay.
Sorry.
Sometimes, yeah, it's hard. Like, we get a feedback loop.
Yes,
so
that is hard.
Put that there. So,
if this might be.
This, yeah, we might have her on there. We appreciate it when people do call in, 826-7771. And the toll-free number is 866-275-1112. So, we will try again. Aloha, you're on the air.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say, thank you to everyone who's spoken today. It's been such a great show. And I just wanted to, like, bring it back to a macro stance where I'm looking around in all these different situations and seeing how there's a force at play here that's totally taking advantage of people and resources and the planet and just gobbling up while everyone's busy. You know, there's this middleman for freedom. You know, and we're all so wrapped up in trying to pay our rent and getting our kids, you know, taken care of. And, you know, we're just running like these little mice around. And in the back room, they're doing all this crazy stuff. And the judges, everyone's like bought. There's no check and balance. So I keep coming back to like, how? It's almost like there's so many things, just like what's happening on our these islands. It's everywhere. It's been happening in Canada. It's happening all over the planet. So it's almost like, what are we going to do? And it's not about color and race and people. It's everyone all at once. What are we on this planet going to do with our day different tomorrow, today? Like, what am I going to do different? Because I do not want to let them know that this is okay anymore. I want to make sure that my dollar, whatever's left of it, is buying the stuff that tells them no. I'm going to the farmer's market now. And I go to Costco. They make it so difficult to find the organic stuff. It's like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to go see, like, 8 gazillion humongous, ridiculous, large, you know, versions of things, like, blown up, out of proportion, bigger is better. You know, it's our sickness right now. It's the bread and circus. It's bigger is better. And they've got us by the you-know-whats, you know? And it's like, I don't want to do that anymore. I am a single mom. You know, I looked for an apartment. I didn't find one. I moved into my van. I'm happy. I thought that beautiful condo in Princeville was awesome. I had the best tub ever. I mean, I had 2 sinks and everything I could ever want. As a musician, I play in my bathroom. All you musicians out there, you know what I'm talking about. I had the best ever. And you know what? It sucked. There were rules. There was dogma. My kid couldn't play. You know, the safety and fear and all this stuff. Now, I'm safety first. My mom's an EMT. She travels around teaching CPR to people.
So, caller, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head, really, yeah. Is that it is an exhaustive job. It's overwhelming. It takes full-time attention, and I'm speaking from experience, you know, showing up at meeting after meeting after meeting, or going here, going there.
And taking care of your family.
And you know, how do you have time to take care of your family? And so for people who are working 3 jobs, they can't afford to do it. So it's what creates a stacked system. So I appreciate the point that you made. I have another caller holding. Thank you so much for sharing your mana'o.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I did have a lot of family on the North Shore, and they mentioned that it's not about a telescope, since we get plenty of telescope up there. It's about a nuclear warhead. And I don't know how to embellish upon this. I haven't had enough information, but that was their concern.
Well, I have heard some things that this is about the Department of Defense, and my knowledge is most of these telescopes are somewhat funded by the Department of Defense. That's part of the way the money goes through. I really don't believe that this would be a nuclear warhead. There is all kinds of installation that goes around a nuclear warhead, and that simply is not there. There would be a whole different type of construction and security and everything else. So with
what about how they've deceived us on the west side of Kauai with Mana and this has been going on for as long as I've lived here, over 40 years, the missile, you know, like,
well, again,
missile mountains that open up with missiles in them. So it's like somebody mentioned, and this is a Hawaiian that was fighting over there, or not fighting, but protesting over there, and came back and in tears and saying, this isn't about a telescope, this is about a nuclear warhead. And I just wanted to put that out to you because I can't embellish upon it because I don't know enough information, but I just wanted to put that out to you, Felicia, because you got Auntie over there, and everybody is so up in arms about this whole thing, and, you know,
okay.
I just have to pray for everybody.
Mahalo for calling in.
All right. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
And so she's bringing something up, and I think we have to be careful. It doesn't hurt to bring it up. I always appreciate when people bring things up. Sometimes, you know, people have fears, so a lot of times there's reason people go, gosh, it seems like it's bigger than this particular issue. Maybe this other thing's bigger than this particular issue. I do know, and I have studied into it, when you have a nuclear warhead, the other side is going to know where that nuclear warhead is. And if there are, I've heard about the holes in the mountains many times. That is here at Mana, so okay, I can give that. But
not Mauna Kea.
I don't know. I can't say that those things are accurate or not. But I do know that when there is a nuclear arsenal or any kind of warhead, that there is security features that simply don't exist here or there.
Yeah, and so.
A lot of times people bring something up to me and I might bite on it, and sometimes it's true, sometimes it isn't. That's one that I don't feel particularly concerned about. Alan?
What purpose would, and let's assume that this speculation is correct, but I'm not sure I buy it, but What would the purpose be for a nuclear warhead to be at the summit of Mauna Kea? I'm just not thinking of anything.
Right. It's a lot of work to do it. But in all respect to anybody who calls in to share something, I appreciate your aloha. Mm-hmm. And I'm just on that one, I'm going to say we can rest easy that I think that one is inaccurate, both for what you're just asking there, but there mm-hmm. are many other signs that would say that not likely.
No.
No. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia, Kauai Soapbox. I have Marshall in the studio with me, Puanani Rogers, and Alan Parakini. And I'm going to tap Alan a little bit harder after the top of the hour here. So, Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man. Oops.
Or CQ.
Hold on. I gotta do that again. I am really sorry, everybody. This is community radio.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Moloa'a, K284AL Haleiwa.
Thousands of cigarette butts litter our parks and beaches. Is Kauai an ashtray? Smokers, if you're in your car or at the beach, hang on to your butts. Protect ocean wildlife and keep Kauai clean. A reminder from the Sofrata Foundation.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We really, really appreciate our underwriters. Pretty soon we're having another fun drive coming up, and you can actually help that be shorter by going on to kkcr.org, go to the donate button. Helps us go. We have wave riders coming up. There's all kinds of ways of supporting this station, and we need you all. So, Alan, can you just give us a little bit of your background?
Well, I spent a long time in the news business, 26 years as a reporter, 20 years in public relations. I was the PR person for the LA Superior Court. I also represented a nonprofit once in public relations that operates the Mount Wilson telescopes.
Oh, my gosh.
So I have that extra perspective.
That, I'd love to hear it.
And I moved over here in 2012, and I make furniture.
Yeah. So, and when you've worked with the courts, that's the biggest piece that I'm kind of trying to pull in there.
Right.
And I will say, like, my nephew, he's an engineer on those mirrors on the telescope. So he helped to do the James Webb Space Telescope, which is replacing the Hubble, and he is also working on the Giant Magellan Telescope that's going in Chile. I get what fun jobs these are for people, and like for my dear darling nephew, who feels like my firstborn, I got him that Time Life series of books on the stars when he was like 10 years old, and he read every single one of them, and it really shaped the whole direction that he went in. I can appreciate when people are passionate and love learning, and I doubt any one of them that's in the process of building this telescope thinks, oh, how can we hurt the Hawaiian people? I'm sure that that's not where they're at. So pulling it back to this discussion, we're going to go more again on the Waimea lawsuit in just a moment, but we were speaking about the dispensaries, the marijuana dispensaries. I want to speak to that for a moment because it's a complex piece of law that they're doing. So they're asking to put a state-run dispensary on each island, and there would be only one here. So last week, the county council worked to do a resolution to say no to that. And so I know many people were really unhappy with that. I think it's time for us to have dispensaries. But there were some good reasons for the no. There's good reasons to have them, but among the good reasons is that it is another preemption law. Like those of us who were really big on 2491, we were saying, hey, leave it to the county, leave it to the county. Well, this one says no. It's not to the county at all. It's only up to the state. And that only one on the island, and then the state picks who that dispensary is. And so then you can have a bit of a monopoly. We can see that maybe those prices would be unhealthy when there's just one who gets it. And then the other challenge is that the banks don't work with the dispensaries. It has to be all cash because it's federally against the law. So when there is a lot of cash concentrated in one place, there becomes enforcement issues at protecting it. And so part of the big humbug was that the county doesn't get any of this money. The state gets the money. The county doesn't get the money. So it's not as simple as it sounds. And I felt like all the council people do want people to be able to get the medication they have. I appreciated the viewpoints of both sides of the council. It was the usual split. Gary, Mason, and Joanne voting in the same way I probably would have looked at that. And then Ross, Mel, Errol, and Kipukai voted for a resolution to say, no, let's not go with it. But it was it was nuanced. We would have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, I just want to thank you so much for this incredible show, and I just need to skip back 1 second to Mauna Kea. And I want to say that if we all hold in our hearts that there can be a win-win solution for this and that Mauna Kea can stay the sacred place of Hawaii or a sacred place of Hawaii, and that's really important to me. And I think if we hold that in our hearts, it will help us get there.
So does the win-win, how's the win for the side?
How does the win-win work? The win-win is the mountain wins.
The mountain wins.
And everybody else works around it and understands how important that divinity and that connection, I mean, it's a holy place.
So maybe the other win could be another community that actually really wants it completely undivided. They can win by having that mountain, I mean, that telescope placed in that community. Maybe that would be the other win, because win-win means both sides of the happy.
I think the other win is actually that they would wake up and understand what is going on there and would figure out a way to have their telescope work for them without desecrating something. That's the win. That's
okay.
The other win.
Thank you so
Does
much
that
for
work?
Call. Yeah.
Does that work? Yeah.
Well,
thank you so much for this incredible show. Yeah.
Thank
Aloha.
You.
Aloha.
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 Okay, we might be getting a call in from people who have been, or a person. One of my friends, I'll just be honest, has been going to court there almost every day with the Waimea lawsuit. And she was honestly a little bit hesitant to call in on the show because it's such an emotionally charged piece and she doesn't want to be delivering a bummer message. And she's just in there watching. But I did ask her, you know, if it's got many people in here from Kauai. There are 64 families who are part of this lawsuit. And she said it is just about an empty courtroom.
I think it's actually far more plaintiffs than that. And what surprised me in the court record is that there's between 6 and 10 of these folks who are self-represented. They're in a lawsuit in federal court, and they have no attorneys. Everybody else is represented. It's not a question of not being able to afford representation, and why these 6 to 10 plaintiffs have elected to move forward on their own is a mystery. There's an old saying among lawyers that a man who or person who acts as his or her own attorney has a fool for a client. And that's usually correct. In fact, I have yet to okay. encounter a self-represented situation, or it wasn't correct.
Well, I'm gonna just argue that one with you a little bit. I tend to go and as an advocate for sometimes people that are in court, usually for they tend to be in there for cultural reasons, and I've seen a number where they self-represent pro se, and even on criminal ones, and sometimes they win. When they wouldn't if they had a court-appointed attorney. So maybe it's the court-appointed attorney is the caveat on that. But I do want to say sometimes. But I actually like your statement. I'm going to remember that one about them having a fool for a client. But, like, let's look at what is the case in what do you know about?
Well, let's talk about what this case actually is, because I think there is a lot of or a great deal of misunderstanding around the island. People think this is a GMO case, and it's not. It has nothing to do with GMOs. It's a straight and simple dust damage liability case. It's where this question should have been in the first place. It's very interesting to me to look at who is representing the plaintiffs. There is a four-person law firm from Las Vegas that is handling most of the counsel, and the other lawyer is featured prominently in a book I'm sure you know, Broken Trust.
I've read the book, yeah.
Okay, so one of the people who figures prominently in the unsavory stuff that happened with the Kamehameha schools is Gerald Jervis. Here he is representing the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. You just want you look at the combination of lawyers, out of town, Las Vegas, class action firm, that's what they do, not associated typically with any kind of political cause, and someone who was in the midst of the mess with Kamehameha.
So that is a really important piece, and actually when I first met him, I went to a public hearing, and he completely laid that on the table, owned it, he didn't pretend like anything was otherwise. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. I'd like to say mahalo to, you know, all the people up in Mauna Kea.
Okay.
They're doing a good job, you know. And there's a lot of stuff on the table right now, you know, pesticides and our water and, you know, all pertaining to our public rights. You know, and talking about lawyers, If you're representing yourself or you're getting a lawyer, let me say first, make sure that that lawyer is online and on board with you. If he's not on board to help you, get rid of him. You know, because there's a lot of lawyers, especially if you're taking a lawyer from the state, where the state appoints you a lawyer, make sure that lawyer is doing what you want. Not what he wants or what the state wants, you know, because those lawyers run by the state are going to work for them. And you have to understand your lawyer, especially when they come from the you know, the state.
Right.
And, you know, talking about the herb, marijuana, we need to decriminalize it. There's a lot of people in there for just, you know, well, just having a pipe or, you know, just a joint, you know. And what is this? This is today we know this is a healing plant. You know, we know that. Just like we know what Roundup is doing to us. And they're still denying it. You know, so we have to understand that these people are only interested in money. They don't care about us.
You mean the lawyers?
Yeah.
Or
the state of Hawaii.
The state of Hawaii, okay.
Or our government. They have abandoned us for the corporation. You know, so this is all about the people coming together and saying enough is enough. We have enough of your lies and the treatment of our land, our finances, you know. They haven't been good stewards. That's all to it. They haven't been good stewards to our land, our air, and our water, you know. And I've heard some stuff coming back from the United Nations that our problem is, as a community, as a world community, is the exhaust coming out of our cars. That's the problem. You know, that's what's coming from the United Nations. They're working today to solve that problem. And they're saying that all this spraying up in the mountains, up in the air, all these spraying is part of the elimination of global warming.
You're speaking of the geoengineering.
Yes. Whether that, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the table right now. And, you know, there's a lot of awareness, and the people are everywhere want answers, you know. And for us in Hawaii, we have an answer, you know. Keanu Sai's report is, you know, states that to be a kingdom, we need a king. Without a king, we are not a kingdom. We are a state. If we want to get out of the state, we need to really look at our kingdom and how it was run. You know, and for me, I look at our first law that protects us. And they don't use that law in Hawaii. If you go into their courts with that law, be ready to lose, or any law, because corporate now takes over everything that we were taught, you know.
And so we're going to go back to that part of the discussion, but to support what you're saying, I want the listener to be aware of a video on Big Island Video News. If they were to Google search Mauna Kea and the Occupied Hawaiian Kingdom, it's a 14-minute video in which Keanu Sai is really speaking to what you're talking about there, and he makes some very, very good points. So that's called Mauna Kea and the Occupied Hawaiian Kingdom, and it really applies to much deeper topics than just the telescope. But that's
it
right.
It is, you know, or it is. It's much deeper. It goes deeper. And the most glaring thing today is the global warming. They're still denying it, you know, but the scientists are starting, they're coming together and finding out that we need to get, we need to really stop driving, you know.
Right. Well, there's a lot of challenges, and you're bringing up really good points, and it's a much broader topic than what I'm talking about right now, but if you'd like to call me and come in and help me do another show, that'd be great, or Auntie Nani's show is another really good one for that, too. Okay.
Thank you. Thank
All right.
You.
But, Mahalo.
You know, I just saying that, you know, decriminalize. If you're going to talk about the marijuana, decriminalize it already. You know, we need to get our people out of jail and get them onto the marijuana farms, you know.
Yeah.
The people should be growing this stuff and giving it away to everybody.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. Okay. And so he brought up really great points, and then I'm going to ask callers to hold back for just a moment because I want to actually address this discussion. And then we'll take calls again shortly thereafter. So, Alan, you were bringing something up that I'm going to speak to because, and one of the reasons I really like having you in here is we don't always see things the same way. We can we're almost have become slightly famous. That's my fault, but for not seeing things always the same way. What has happened in this Waimea lawsuit, because I've followed it for years now, is that their central challenge was people feel like they are dying or having very, very severe health hazards because laden in the dust is these pesticides blowing across the road. And so what has happened, and this is a question that I have of you, it's one of the reasons why I asked you to come in here, is I don't understand why the court was able to shave down the case to where it trivialized the real issue instead of being the issue being about being poisoned from this dust, this pesticide dust, is now just, how does dust impact their enjoyment of their lives? And so people are being flushed out of the courtroom, or they're saying it's really ready for a mistrial because people are showing that they want to talk before 2009. They're not allowed to bring any comparative history, like what it was like during the sugar time or what it was like before pioneers started doing their seed research right there. Basically, the whole essence of the case has been removed, and they're looking at the tiniest little sliver. And so it looks frivolous to people sitting in the courtroom listening.
Well, bear in mind one thing. It is extremely dangerous to predict, particularly early in a trial, what a jury will do.
Right.
I have seen juries return verdicts that were completely counterintuitive. I was present at a murder trial where the individual on trial, Phil Spector, was unquestionably guilty of murder. And the jury hung the first time. And I'll tell you, the people who worked at the court, myself included at the time, our jaws dropped open. How can this killer have walked out? Now, he was, in fact, convicted on retrial. But it's important to remember that, particularly early in a trial, you can't draw any conclusions about where it's going to go. You don't know what the strategy the lawyers have in mind may be. The judge has taken, she made a couple of what I thought were, and we may disagree on this, logical rulings. One of them was that Hawaii law, particularly that Hawaii law that relates to generally accepted agricultural practices, that has to control her rulings in the case, even though it's in federal court. I think that was a right decision as a matter of law. I don't know that she had any choice but to make that call than what she did. One of the purposes of this trial is it's called a bellwether trial.
Tell us what that means.
A bellwether trial is if you have a case that's gigantic, and in this one meets every criterion for, is this a big case, meaning a large number of plaintiffs. You can't have a single trial where the individual cases of 174 people are presented separately. Everybody would be here for a decade. So the lawyers and the judge select a small group of plaintiffs, and they try the case as it pertains to them. If the jury returns a verdict, then the logical thing that would happen would be everything would coalesce around a settlement. What the judge really wants to have happen here is for the case to settle.
Give money.
Right. Well, yeah. Not necessarily. There could be other provisions in a settlement. But sure, money is always on top.
And this is a civil case?
It's a civil case.
Which means it's not about did they commit a crime. It's do they owe damages?
That's right. And one of the things that I think is really unfortunate is this may be one of the most important trials of this decade for Kauai.
I'm in agreement, and I don't see it really getting coverage in the newspaper.
Well, that's my point. The Garden Island, and I'm not trying to pick a fight with Bill Buley. I think he's done a good job, all things considered, with that newspaper. But it's owned by Wahoo Publications, which owns the Star Advertiser. I get why the editor of the Garden Island doesn't have a reporter to send to Honolulu every day to cover a trial. I understand that. But the Star Advertiser certainly could be covering in the courtroom, and those stories being published here. As it is, we're all sort of guessing in the dark what's happening in a case that affects thousands of Kauai residents. Why is that? It doesn't make any sense to me that the island media are so silent on this case. Why? I just don't have an answer.
And when I posted that it was coming out, I noticed there was a whole bunch of shares when I said it's going to court. And when I see a whole lot of shares on just a couple sentences, this show very much happens on social media, that tells me there's not a better report anywhere where somebody can see it and that's what really gets posted. So it's not getting shared. These people are over there basically unrepresented. They're not in the room. Some of them have gone over. It's very expensive to go over. I don't understand why it can't happen here, why they can't send a judge over here and just borrow one of our courtrooms. Maybe they just can't do that. I don't know.
That's, as a practical matter, that's just not going to happen in federal court. There is no federal courthouse on Kauai. The way the federal court system is designed, Honolulu is the home port, if you will, of the Ninth Circuit, which includes all of the western states.
So why is it in federal court and not state court?
Well, it was originally filed in state court, and Pioneer was successful in getting it removed over the objections of the lawyers representing the plaintiffs. Pioneer was successful in getting it removed to federal court. They made a case that there were compelling federal issues. The judge bought it.
Because when I watch the cynicism that grows, where, like, the last caller who called in, who says, you know, the government doesn't care about us. I ran for office. I mean, it's not that I don't believe in the government at all, but really, when you look at it, the government needs to fund itself. And so it tends to approve these housings and elements that don't feel comfortable to everybody else. You know, they're going to want these things that have high dollars, high this, high that. You know, I mean, when you look at what choices are made, it's made where it's really good at self-funding. I mean, and so I'm just saying, here we have a lot of cynicism that comes out, and when we look at a case like this, like before I was on the air, I didn't really get so involved with the GMO issue. It really didn't have meaning to me. I don't like acronyms. My sister kind of works in, she doesn't any longer, but worked in the industry. She's an evolutionary cellular biologist. Mm. She said it's all good, and Dr. Deborah, she's really smart. Okay, I accept that. So as I get people calling and they start telling me their stories, and I go down and I sit on their roofs with them and I see the blankets of dust that are coming over and see somebody who, I hope if he's listening, you're doing well, thank you, but he didn't look like he was long for this life. Young children, stage 4 cancer, everybody on the street was a cancer widow. He wasn't wanting his wife to be the next one. I mean, there's so much legitimacy that people are ill. Now, connecting it to that, it takes a little bit of effort.
That's exactly the point.
Wasn't that though?
Okay, we have somebody who stepped in. Yeah. Yes.
Wasn't that the whole point of the lawsuit? The lawsuit started because people were ill. It was the dust that was coming into the buildings, but it was the illness that was happening to the people.
That's correct.
Again, Alan, why didn't you answer the question? She asked. I heard a distinct question. In your opinion, why did the judge not allow people to talk about health effects, which were a major part of the lawsuit in the first place? Why are they not allowed to talk about pesticide, herbicides, or fungicides?
She made a ruling on a motion in which she ruled, and I have it here somewhere.
Give me a second. This whole lawsuit was built on health effects.
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't, because I went to the
It was all about dust?
It was about the pesticides in the dust. Like what happened, like I went to these opening statements or public hearings on this with those people. And what it was is that they did not feel, there's all these kinds of ways that rules, just like what he said, the modern agricultural practices and the label
Correct.
Of the law, there's all these rules that are in there to prevent people from being able to claim their health as the core piece of the problem. Just like with the cell towers or any of the stuff with the EMF, we had the Federal the Federal Communications Act in 1996 said state and local governments cannot protect the health and safety of the people. It all goes for the Federal Communication Commission. So it's all at that level. And so there's ways that things preempt being able to be helped. And so that was there. So what was explained at the very beginning, and like he was bringing up about Gerald Jarvis being part of the Kamehameha school shame, that they had to, they made the decision that if they took this to court on their health, that it would be thrown out of court because the courts can't really protect people very well on the health. So what is a correct thing is that all these people's housing prices had plummeted, and people couldn't sell their houses to get out of town if they wanted to. People did anyway. Some people died.
There are quality of life issues that come up in a case like this, and so, they're still in the case.
Well,
isn't that health related, quality of life?
It could be.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. So with this challenge, that it was the group decision that they were going to say, we lose the value of our homes, we lose the quality of our life, we have these challenges, but it had to be limited to the poison-laden dust coming into their house, ruining the value of their homes and their items in there. And they couldn't say, hey, our family's dying. One family had 35 members die.
But another family lost a TV, a refrigerator, a microwave.
And that matters more in our courts.
Okay.
So
material things matter more than people, I guess, in the courts.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so that was a hard conversation that was had.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the room when the discussion was happening. And what it was is that if the companies even have to become liable for the loss of values of the homes, when they, even if we just say it is the perception that if you buy this house and you move into this house, you have a carcinogenic risk. If you move into this house, the value of the house is going to be diminished. Mm-hmm. So if companies go, all right, if we move into this neighborhood, we're going to have to basically buy out the houses downwind, you can have an economic barrier to be moving. But I don't believe that before it went to court that people realized they couldn't do a comparative. They couldn't say what it was like to live in that house in 1995 versus 2005 versus 2015. They're having to just, they can only go back as far as 2009. So it removes from them the ability to say, before these guys were here, my life was happier. They can just say the difference since they were already there. Am I correct, Alan?
Yes. There's something called the statute of limitations that restricts the time period that can be affected by litigation. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying it's there. The judge has ruled correctly that it applies. But I also notice in one of her orders, which I'm just sitting here furiously reading, that she has not said, absolutely not, no other plaintiffs can testify. There could be circumstances, and that's, again, why we're at the very beginning of a trial that's likely to last several weeks. People are drawing conclusions based on the witnesses and what's happened in a courtroom in the first 3 days. That's a dangerous thing to do if you're trying to figure out how a case is actually going to come out. And now I've just lost it again, but it is not outside the realm of possibility that some of these other plaintiffs will be able to go on the witness stand.
Right. They might. And I know with the friend that I was talking to who was in the room, one of the things that she was really conscious of not wanting to say on air was she didn't want to create people to feel disheartened, even though, in fact, she was disheartened. She said she just felt like throwing up in there. I'm just being honest. I felt like it would be fine to be speaking out to this, but she said that, you know, she missed the first 2 days and that things can change so much, you know, that right now it's largely the defense attorneys tearing down the plaintiffs as witnesses.
That's
and,
what they do.
Yeah.
That's
and she,
their job.
She said they're being sharks, you know, and in her opinion, kind of going, being a bit nasty and going after the witnesses and putting words in their mouth, and it's not really being challenged very hard. So it was pretty hard for her to be sitting there watching it and observing it. And she's another person from a different island who has flown over there to help. And it's very, very expensive for her. And
really, well, I would love to hear what she has to say. And I think you thought you had her on the line a little while ago, and maybe we didn't. But
yeah,
it would, she would be a most useful person. But again, we're shooting in the dark here. You don't know, you don't know, I don't know what's happening in the courtroom on a daily basis. We should. There should be a way or a means of telling us.
Why did the judge outlaw all cameras and all that? Is that a normal thing?
That's a
yes,
normal thing.
It is. Okay. The federal courts are worse than the state courts. There is no way you're going to get a camera inside a federal courtroom.
Okay.
It just isn't going to happen.
Yeah, so that's a problem, and I guess when I'm bringing this up on the show, like last week I kind of brought it up, it's very difficult because I've been speaking to people who are plaintiffs, and they've just been really quiet, and they've said, I appreciate you're trying to bring this up. I am not allowed to speak to anybody about what is happening.
That's what any lawyer would tell any plaintiff, because one of the things you want to avoid if you're a lawyer is having your plaintiff tell a story one way to the media or someone else and then tell the story a different way on the witness stand. That's catastrophe if you're a lawyer. So, yes, any reasonably competent lawyer would tell the clients to shut up. It's just the way it is, unfortunately. But that is that's the way the system works.
And so I guess that's the challenge that all of us are having, is it doesn't feel like the system even works. And we'll hope for the best with this. So let me ask you, if a settlement is reached where the plaintiffs are given a little bit of money, how does that influence the future? That's the best that can come out of this, right, for the plaintiffs. The best that can come out of it for the plaintiffs is they get some cash settlement that's kind of a spanking to the companies. It's not like there is a consequence that's going to stop this kind of behavior.
Well, a settlement doesn't necessarily only have to be about money. Frequently, when cases like this settle, agreements are made about future behavior, what will be done differently. It's just impossible to know because we're very early in a trial. There's no way to predict the outcome. Clearly, Pioneer took a very hard-line position, would not settle. So, and I think probably the plaintiff's lawyers, the Las Vegas class action firm, what they're in business of doing is getting large corporations to settle. It's almost a failure for them if they end up in trial in a case like this.
Okay.
So it's clear Pioneer has held fast.
And now, you're saying they're a Las Vegas firm, but I know their office is in Kaneohe, right?
They have a Hawaii office. There are four lawyers in the firm. Only one of them is admitted to practice in Hawaii. Now, in the federal court, that doesn't matter. In our circuit, there's nothing unethical or illegal about that. They don't have to be members of the bar in the state where a federal court trial is happening. But it's overwhelmingly a Las Vegas-based class action law firm.
Okay. So I appreciate your clarity on these things because I'm relatively novice at being able to interpret what's going on over there. I wish it felt more fair. I wish that the plaintiffs were able to be in there. I asked her. I said, "Well, who is there?" I said, "Are the employees of Pioneer in there?" She said, "No, really." She goes, "It's just a whole bunch of lawyers." And
it's not surprising.
She said, "It's a whole bunch of lawyers and almost her." We have a caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Are you?
Hi. I have to just run away from my radios.
Is this about?
I wanted to address Kyle of the Las Vegas law firm.
Okay.
And I've been very close with them. I've been in the movement for a long time. I was there at the very beginning when Gerald Jervis was in Waimea.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle
Smith.
Yes. Is, for me, a man with incredible integrity, an incredible dignity, and I put my full faith in him. And if you listen to the testimony that he gave that day at the Veterans Center, it was fairly early in the day. I was the person who ferried people back and forth from the airport, the expert witnesses. And
This is in those GMO, one of the first GMO pesticide 2491 hearings.
It was the big one that happened from 9 o'clock in the morning to 1:30 at night.
Yes, okay.
Where Dr. Evslin gave his incredible testimony. And Kyle Smith made me cry. When I heard it, he was so inclusive of all the workers there. He brought so much compassion and so much understanding to the situation in a way that I felt like I was in the presence of an angel. And I just want to say that I have full faith in those guys. And maybe Gerald Jervis did some funky stuff back before, but the time of redemption is now. And I think that their whole heart is in this for the people of Waimea. I have not seen them be anything but caring. And they have educated the public. They have gone out of their way. I mean, I've put on events with them and been invited to help them with their events. And I've been really impressed with the caliber of what they're doing.
I have been to a number of events with them, and I have to say that I also felt very, very good about Kyle Smith. And, you know, Gerald Jarvis didn't speak nearly so much, and he did do a big column, I am known for this bad thing. And he did speak well. I do know that some people, you know, of course, right now they're a little frightened of what's going on, like when they're seeing how shaved down that this hearing, this case has been. It's a gut punch to see such a very, very narrow piece of it be what is discussed. So,
but you know what? If that's the starting point, we have them in court. Alan said they don't really want to go to court. They are in court. They have to spend their money as well.
Yeah, so thank you for those points. And as far as I know, these guys are on contingency. They've been working for years without compensation.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Yeah,
that's
totally
how these
have.
Things work.
No, and Kyle Smith, for me, is a champion. I will put him in the Aaron Brockovich place.
Well, thank you for sharing that so much. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, and thank you for your show today, Felicia. It's just awesome.
You're welcome. Aloha.
Aloha.
So...
I mean, she brings up a point. I really liked Kyle Smith also. So I do feel like they're working in the right direction. It is discouraging, just like the caller before this one, the man who said, you know, it's so narrow where they actually seem to even care about the people when the court can. The laws aren't designed to help the people. The laws are designed to help the companies. That's how it feels.
One of the challenges in any case like this is you have a lay jury that is not well educated on the technicalities of what may be involved in whatever the case is, in this case, pesticide science.
So lay jury means regular people.
Right. We don't have professional jurors in this country. God help us if that ever happened. It shouldn't. But you do have to make allowances, and the judge has done that in this case, for the risk you run of hopelessly confusing the jury versus how can the case be structured so that they can understand the issues that are presented to them. And again, I think we're being, at the moment, unfair to this jury by assuming anything.
Okay, expound.
Well, a jury goes through a case in a situation where they can't discuss the case with one another. They can't discuss it with anyone else. And so you have people who are independently arriving at a conclusion. And what we know about jurors is those impressions and conclusions can change radically during the course of a trial. That's why we try cases. So you have to give the jury in federal court the benefit of the doubt that they are trying to do what they feel or will feel to be the fair thing. It's quite possible it's not going to seem fair to some people in the suit on either side. Who knows? We don't know that yet.
So if Pioneer wins and they say the court, the jury says, you know what? The dust, live with it. You know, it's not that big of a deal. You have no complaint. You're not worthy of some sort of response. What is the outcome of that?
No matter who prevails in this case, you can bet a lot of money it's going on appeal. It's already in the federal system. That saves a little time, actually, in terms of ultimate appeal stuff. But this jury's verdict will not be the final word in this case. There are several reasons why not. One could be an appeal. One could be a decision to try some additional cases. Not to sound crass about this, the purpose of a bellwether trial is to price the case.
Tell us what that means.
You want to know how much, if the jury finds liability on Pioneer's part, the jury will establish a sum that you can then apply to a much broader settlement. If they decide, for example, that there are six plaintiffs, and it may be more than six, and they've been damaged to the tune of $150,000 each, then it becomes a matter of simple arithmetic. It also becomes a matter of inevitability that that's what a settlement is likely to be. If the jury finds in Pioneer's favor that there is no liability, then that case, well, no matter who wins, it's like 2491. No matter who wins, it's going on appeal. It's just that simple. It's that kind of case.
Right. And I mean, it sounds like what's interesting when the moratorium happened on Maui and it goes on appeal, well, the decision is, okay, you guys can keep planting just as you can. When the telescope is basically, there's an injunction on that, they go, well, okay, but go bring up the earth movers, keep digging. You know, it seems like
these are not situations that are alike. No. The telescope situation is a dispute over a whole bunch of environmental, cultural, and religious factors. In Maui, Hawaii Island, and Kauai, it's a dispute about whether laws that were enacted at the county level are valid. And the way courts typically approach that is if there's a reason to doubt the validity of a statute, you enjoin its enforcement until...
Tell me what enjoin means.
You prevent its enforcement until the legal dispute can be resolved. Because if you, let's say the court or the it had been possible for Kauai County to go ahead and try to put into place the inspection system that Bill 2491 included. If the law, if the law has been struck down by the judge at the initial federal court level, it will now go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Who knows if it has Supreme Court potential? I think the county would probably throw in the towel long before that. But if you get to the end of the lawsuit and the decision has been contrary to what the statute was supposed to put in motion, then you have to go back and undo a lot of things that should never have been allowed. So it's only natural that you, if there's a disagreement over whether a statute is constitutional or whether there's a preemption issue, which is what's the case here, it's only logical, and it is simply the way courts deal with this.
I think one thing that is so hard, like when I was over on Hawaii Island, I want to give a shout out of the aloha that was given to me for people picking me up at the airport, letting me stay at their house, and so on and so forth. These are people I've met through the PLDC and the 2491 movements, all these different things. And so in that case, one of these people has been significantly poisoned. She has clear evidence of organophosphates in her blood, and that she's had profound health challenges as a result of it. And she's trying to, you know, get some sort of restitution from the golf course that caused the problem. Well, she can't even get anybody to take her case. You know, it's very difficult as one person to get any kind of protection from
court.
You just can't get it. And unless you have a lot of money, but you don't have a lot of money when you've become so ill that you don't have the strength to even work any longer, right? Your life becomes absolutely dysfunctional. I like to see that she's getting stronger now, but there are these kind of problems. So it seems like bullies, you know. A company like Pioneer has so much more money than does the county, let alone the people who live across the street from them, that without the help of these attorneys working for years and working hard for no money, one would presume, right? Where were they getting? They're not getting paid for it along the way.
They're probably getting nothing unless or until there's a verdict in the plaintiff's favor. That's probably true.
Yeah, so it's not easy to see where we have justice. We have one last call. I'm going to take it. It's got to be very short because I want to bring up a couple more topics. I want to talk about Bill Balfour for the Water Commission just briefly, and then I want to just mention two items that are coming up, and we'll have the County Council report before we have Jazz with John. So we'll have a little bit of time for an aloha, but this is a quick call. Aloha, caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to make a comment about the case. I've been down there.
Yay, please do. I know who this is.
Yeah, I spent the first week in court. And although there seems to be a lot of hurdles to get over, I think the basic instruction to the jury was that they must make their decision based on the evidence presented. And to me, the Pioneer lawyer, he was trying to get them to, he was suggesting that their assessment and their decision would come from their own personal assessment of how the, you know, information was being presented. He did not mention evidence. And the evidence that, that was presented visually was overwhelmingly for the plaintiffs. There is no way they can deny the damage caused by the dust. So that's the main issue.
So there were pictures. Pictures were shown where they saw it all over the louvers and the inside of the house, that kind of thing?
Yep, and homes stained by the red dirt. And, you know, there's differences in the dirt in the yard. It's brown. The dirt on the walls and the eaves and all over the home is stained orange. And even if you paint your home, it'll get stained again. So the evidence was, to me, overwhelming. And if the jury pays attention to the instruction from the judge, that they would have to decide based on the evidence that is presented, then it looks good to me, my opinion. There might be a lot of legal issues, but if they go according to the instructions, there is definite damage presented and the evidence is overwhelming. And there's a lot more that could be presented, but they won't allow it to go prior to 2009.
And how do you feel? Are you feeling strong? I mean, I'm hoping that you do. Are you feeling strong and it's okay that it's not even in there, all the hardships that the families and sometimes the losses? Are you still empowered when you're watching what is happening with this narrow scope?
It was originally going to be a four-part approach to the issue. So this was the first part, the real estate. And we knew that, but whether they're going to continue on to the other three parts, I don't know.
Are you a plaintiff, sir?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I also been impacted in my health and everything else, which they're not going to consider because that's the big question. Yeah.
And you've had more than one family member have a direct or have a serious impact while you all are living there.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, all documented medically, the hospitals and everything, emergency rooms, can't breathe, the whole, but, you know, that's not the issue. The issue is the damage from the dust, and that has been proven to my way of looking at it. It was, the evidence was overwhelming. And the pioneer lawyer going after the doing character assassinations and all of that, it did not sit well with the jurors. You know, they look like, you know, why are they attacking the credibility of the witnesses and trying to make them look like they're a bunch of criminals and, you know.
You know, it's important not to sell American jurors short.
Yeah.
By and large, people who serve on juries want to do the right thing. They want to make a determination in their own minds what the right thing is. But they're remarkably independent, and they're remarkably intelligent for people who may be complete strangers to complicated issues.
Yeah, even if you don't know all of the legalities and you may not understand all of the, you know, fine legal points involved, if you are instructed by the judge to look at the evidence as your primary gauge to make your decision, then if they look at the evidence, there is no doubt. There is damage, no doubt. I don't see how anybody in their right mind can rule against the plaintiffs.
Well, thank you for that testimony. It is very meaningful. We're right at the top of the hour, so we're going to have to go. But if when is this court case likely to be over? Is it another week, two, three?
May 5th, May 7th.
Okay.
Somewhere around there, the jury goes into deliberation.
Okay.
And then, you know, they come up with a basic decision, but it can also extend into punitive damages. That's where the big bucks comes to stop them from doing what they're doing.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, well, I don't want to threaten any of your ability to be strong in court, so I will not ask you to come in yet. But I really appreciate your mana'o and all that you are going through, and I thank you very much. And this has been...
I'm not a witness, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay, perfect. So we are at the top of the hour, and Jazz with John is coming on, and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Aloha. This has been Kauai Soapbox. Everybody...